Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson, and it should be because I have Bill Larson right here in the studio with me, and he's sponsoring this. So, but it's wonderful to have him here. He's my writer's legal eagle, and he's always got something interesting for us to know about the law, which is so important for writers. So, hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Great. Nice to have you in the studio today.
Thank you.
So, what are we going to talk about today? We have so many things that writers are always asking questions. What should they do? What should they do? And, of course, I tell them, first of all, they should contact you, which is always a good idea because I know you do give free consultations. But what are some of the topics that have come up recently for you?
All right. Let's talk about some of the important legal concepts for writers and authors. Okay. We discussed previously that copyright is a constitutional principle. In other words, an author has an inalienable right to its to their authorships. And a lot of people don't understand that that comes from the Constitution, which means it can't be taken away from you without due process. Now, that's not the end of the line. Okay, that's the beginning of the line. The fact that you as the author have a constitutional right to your authorship means that it can't be taken away from you, but you have to do something more. And that's the process of copyright registration. In the law, we call that perfection. So once you have this right, you have to go to the copyright office, send in your work, pay the check, file the form, and then you perfect your rights in copyright. That is probably the most important thing an author can do for their works. And it is very easy to do because you can go online at loc.gov, which is Library of Congress, and you can download the form and fill it out and type in your credit card and upload your work, and now your work is copyrighted. You've perfected the copyright in your authorship. That is the single most important thing any author can do.
So everybody listening out there, you just got a great free advice from a lawyer who knows what he's talking about.
So go to the web and go to loc.gov, which is the Library of Congress. It is one of the most fantastic websites that the government has. And there is a ton of free information for authors. And that's where you can learn about your rights. Now, a lot of it is legalese, so it may be confusing to authors, so you want to see a copyright attorney to help you and make sure that you fill out the form correctly and that you perfect your rights. Now, I tell a lot of my authors that the copyright registration is the equivalent of what you call the key to the courtroom door. Although you have the right of copyright as a constitutional right, you can't enforce it if you don't register, right, perfect your copyright with the Library of Congress. That's the important part. So if somebody misappropriates your authorship, you cannot do anything if your copyright is not registered.
But what happens if, like, you suddenly find somebody's used your copyright, used a story, for example, that you've written, and you didn't do this perfection? Is it too late?
No, it's not too late. You can register your copyright after the misappropriation, but you surrender all of the strongest rights that you have, particularly statutory damages, which is the money part, and attorney's fees. So if you have to pay a lawyer, you can't get those back. So it's very important to register the copyright immediately when the authorship is complete, and not wait until somebody misappropriates it.
And again, do not believe the poor man's idea of sending yourself.
Yeah, poor man's copyright doesn't exist.
It does not exist.
It's an urban legend.
It is. And I was reading a book, a very fine book, that someone had written advice for writers on many subjects, and everything in that book is absolutely fantastic, except that one paragraph she's got in there: send yourself a copy and register it in the mail. And I thought, oh, please don't do this, because it ruined the whole book for me, because it's just bad advice.
Yeah, it's evidence of nothing.
Exactly.
Right. So go ahead and get it registered with the government. That's the way you perfect your rights. You go to the website, you fill out the form, or have an attorney help you. Pay the $35 fee, upload your work to the Library of Congress, which is also a great place where the government records all of the authorships of the world. right? That's the Library of Congress. That's where everything is. That's where all the writings of forever are kept. So we have this body of information in this one area, all the writings of all the great authors.
And then if anyone ever goes to Washington, D.C., many people sort of skip the Library of Congress, but you should go in there. It is
fantastic.
A fantastic place. And to get to sit in the reading room is just an amazing, amazing
And we're really feeling. Lucky that we live in a country that respects those kind of rights, okay? I mean, this is a purely Western philosophy, right?
Exactly.
the ability to protect your authorship, yeah.
So now that's the first step we do. Then what else do we
have to
do?
All right, now, after you register your copyright, now you're free to go and try to exploit your work, in other words, publish it, right, and commercialize it, right? And that's the end goal. A lot of times is you want to make some money. And to do that, you're going to have to be involved with contracts. Okay, so it's important to understand the way publishing contracts and other kinds of contracts are used to benefit the author, because if the author is not represented by a lawyer, it could be that the author could be taken advantage of by those who are a little bit more savvy in the contract department.
Can tell you from personal experience.
There's a lot of horror stories.
Which I don't want to talk about. Because I would have to spend a
now,
day
years
here.
Now, years and years ago, the contracts were not so important because all we had was books, right? But now we're in the digital age, and information can be replicated and transferred in a million different ways instantly. And so if you don't have a contract that spells out that you're entitled to not only the rights of your authorship for the particular publication, but that you have what we call the downstream rights, okay, if that's left out of your contract, then later the publisher may go on to create a movie or a play or some other work, a derivative work out of the public of the authorship, and you wouldn't have any rights to that.
And make a stuffed animal.
Anything.
Yes.
So a lot of the money that authors are making now is they're branching out into other products. Okay, Rowling's an example, right, with the Harry Potter. I mean, you got your Harry Potter stuffed dolls, you got your amusement parks. You can only imagine if she had lost all of those rights early on, she would not be the second richest person on the planet right now.
Exactly.
Right? And so she was lucky that she had those contracts in place and she was able to make money off of all those downstream. Who would ever thought in the beginning when she wrote that book that it would be where it is today, with an amusement park here in Orlando, with all of the different products that she has made money from.
I'm sure even with her vivid imagination, she never imagined that.
She made more money on that than she did from the book.
Oh, of course.
Right. So that's a valuable revenue stream for our authors out there. If your book gets picked up and it is made into a movie or a play or it's adapted in some other way or the author goes on to pitch other products, right? Maybe you go on to have a perfume. Maybe you go on to have furniture. Maybe you go on to have an amusement park. There's a whole range of rights through publication that the author can make money on, and you want to make sure that's in your contract. Very important.
Well, it's in your contract. Now, writers, of course, have this go-between person between the person that they're selling or working with, like if they're working with a publisher, and an agent.
Yes.
So you have to be as careful with the contract with the agent, because an agent might
share in the proceeds.
Exactly. And you have to know what you're
signing. So the first line of defense is the attorney, the copyright attorney, who cares nothing except for the author.
Uh-huh.
Right, and protect the author from the agent, protect the author from the publisher, protect the author so that the author gets the full benefit, the full financial benefit that the author is entitled to from the publication.
Because if an agent's smart, then they're going to be asking for 10% of everything.
They could, yeah.
Yeah.
And authors are typically not the type of people that are overly concerned with legalese, and they need to be.
Well, I have told all the writers that I speak to that you have to have sort of two heads. This is a two-headed monster. You have your wonderful head where you're thinking and creating and dreaming and just writing away, but then you have to have that business head. You just
have to do it. And it can be expensive.
Oh.
It can be expensive. The contracts are expensive. And a lot of times authors, when they're just getting started, don't have a lot of money, particularly money that they want to spend on attorneys. And they don't understand the system, so it doesn't seem to have the value. They don't understand where the value lies in using attorneys effectively.
Yeah, I've met a few writers who actually signed their rights away for
yes.
books to movie companies.
And not only authors, you have lyrics, okay, musicians. there has been a great loss of rights and financial reward to writers of songs because they don't have effective contracts. They don't have effective representation. And that's another form of authorship, music lyrics.
Wow. Okay, so we definitely need to think, as writers, we have to think very carefully about what we're doing. And if we're dreaming big and thinking big, then we have to make sure that we protect
ourselves. So, A, we get our copyright registered. Very easy to do. You don't even have to have a lawyer. You should, but you don't have to. Contract, you'll definitely need a lawyer. So you got your copyright in place. Now you have your contract in place. Okay. Now, what about the name of the author? Is that protectable?
Ah.
What if I wanted to start writing a bunch of books and call myself Stephen King? Can I do that?
I don't think so.
If I did, probably somebody would buy it thinking it was from
Stephen King.
Right, and that person would be confused, right? And I can't do that. But I can't do that because Stephen King's very, very famous. And so you can protect your name as an author, or you can protect your pseudonym if you want to have a pen name or a fictitious name. You can protect that, and that's protected by trademark.
So, for example, if you're a college professor, and you want to write naughty books, and you don't want anybody to know that you're writing these books, or you're writing romance fiction, and there you're a very serious economist, and everybody has to think that you know, you're a very serious person, and you're writing romance fiction, and you're using a girl's name. How do you do that?
Well, we use the pseudonym, right? Okay. The pen name, all right? And a lot of people don't want to the public to know who's actually writing, for reasons that you suggested, and otherwise because it creates a little bit of mystery and so forth. And so you can protect that from the public, but you can't protect that from the people that you're contracting with, because they got to know who you are.
The contract has to be with your legal name.
Right. The contract has to be with your legal name. However, you can use non-disclosure provisions, right, non-disclosure agreements with the people that you contract with, so that they can't tell the public that you are the person behind the pseudonym.
Ah, okay.
That's how you protect it.
So
the
that's
contract.
How you protect.
That's right.
You
use the contract,
yourself.
Right, with a non-disclosure provision.
Because when they come to write a check, you want them to write a check and put it in your real bank account.
Right. So the people that you are working with have to know who you are in the real. But the public doesn't. And you can protect that.
Ah, okay. So that's a good idea. So what else? What else should we know that comes off the top of your head here that we...
Well, touching back again on the name, the trademarks, okay? It's a good idea to protect your name, because maybe either your pseudonym, right, which is registrable as a trademark. Let's say you create a work and you're writing under a pseudonym, and then somebody else comes along and says, well, I'm going to get on the gravy train here. I'm going to write a similar type of work under that pseudonym and put that out in public. Now the person who has the original person with the pseudonym is saying, hey, wait, you can't do that. The public identifies this book with this pseudonym. They don't know it's me, but they still identify it as the pseudonym, and they're expecting a certain type of writing, okay? That's an infringement of trademark. So if you're going to use a pseudonym, trademark, register your trademark. Similar to a copyright, you register it with the federal government.
So, like, if you have a name, well, I'm trying to think. Well, in my case, like, I have a name that people can remember. It's Patsy with a Z.
Right, and you can trademark that, because you don't want somebody else to come along and either start a website or to write some information or put out a column using your identifying name. You can trademark that.
So that the trademark process, again, is that something we have to do with a lawyer?
Yes, you do. That's so complicated that you need to use a trademark lawyer.
Okay.
In the same process, you fill out the paperwork, you send it to the government, you pay the file fee, the government does their thing, and pretty soon it comes back. And that piece of paper that the government gives you, either a copyright registration or a trademark registration, is what I call the key to the courtroom door. You need that piece of paper to enforce your rights. If you don't have those papers, then it's very difficult or impossible sometimes to enforce your right in that copyright or that pseudonym.
Okay, so that's good advice for people.
Paper process, unfortunately.
Well...
But it has to be done. It has to be done. And if you're going to be a serious author, you have to pay attention to the legal aspect. Being a great author is not the end of the road. You have to protect yourself legally if you want to take it all the way to financial gain.
Well, it's taking writing as a career. If you're making it your career, it's
and nobody wants to have their work misappropriated or have somebody else hold themselves out as you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's personally devastating, aside from financially devastating, that somebody else would masquerade as you, right, and try to
to take advantage,
and largely for the purposes of money. They're going to try to get some money out of it.
Exactly.
So protect yourself.
Okay. Well, that's great advice. And it's with writers, whether it's when it's a profession, when it's your career, to have a lawyer, and then I would add to have an accountant. It's a good idea because you really have to plan it as a business.
It's a business, right.
It's a business. That's why you register everything. That's why you get organized.
It's sometimes hard to think of as a business because you're not making widgets, right? You don't have a factory. You're not in a restaurant. It seems like something that usually starts off as fun, right? As an interest, a personal interest to an author. Very few authors go into it, start with their authorship by thinking this is going to be a great business.
Yeah, exactly.
It turns into a business, but it starts off as something interesting. And for that reason, the business aspect largely gets left behind for authors. And then very quickly, maybe they get picked up, and then somebody's interested in their work, and everything's going very fast, and the contracts get left behind, and that's bad for the author.
Exactly. I was talking to Neil Schusterman and Eric Elfman, and they got together writing books and just really for fun, and then it all exploded into one thing after another. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to have a mini-series starting in the fall.
Right.
And they have very recognizable characters, and I'm sure they're all going to be merchandised, which is another thing.
Yes, you can protect the characters. Yeah, you can actually protect the characters as well.
Because, you know, when you have specific characters who look a specific way, you don't want somebody to come along and
misappropriate those characters and use them for themselves.
Okay.
Your work is your work.
Okay. So what else can we talk about? I wanted to talk, one little thing. Somebody had asked me the question about the insurance that when a film company was interested in her work.
Yes.
And she's like really in the early stages, really mm-hmm. early stages, and she has she's working with somebody who is working with somebody who's working with somebody. But what they mentioned to her is that one of the things that they would need is to do what's that insurance the word of errors and omissions.
Yeah, errors and omissions, accident omissions
and
insurance.
She said, "What was that? What was that? Okay. What did, she didn't know anything about that. She would have to have insurance
insurance is a great thing if you have a problem, right? If you don't insure your house and the hurricane comes through, your house is gone. If you don't insure your car and you get an accident, you got a real problem. And if you're a professional, we have what's called accident omissions insurance, okay? So lawyers have accident omissions insurance. In case they commit malpractice, they have insurance to compensate the person who was injured. And this goes for authors as well. And the real reason is that when you become famous and you're starting to make money, you get into the crosshairs of those who want to sue you. All right. And we know that we are a very litigious country. All right. There's a lot of frivolous lawsuits. And so you want to protect yourself from those who may file lawsuits against you saying that you hurt me in some way. For instance, let's say you write a work and you use somebody's name and they come out of the woodwork and say, you shouldn't have done that. You injured me. You've hurt me financially. And they file this lawsuit. Very easy to find a lawyer to file a lawsuit. We know that. Well, if you don't have insurance to protect you in that lawsuit, you have to pay for that personally. That can be financially devastating. So just as you may want to insure your car and your house or your business or anything else you might insure, you can insure yourself through what's called accident omissions insurance. And it's not that expensive.
And definitely if you're going into something like, as she explained to me, it's a small budget film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody sort of, they're not learning the business, but they've all been in the business, but they all have mm-hmm. Concerns.
Right.
And one of them was that they asked her, I mean, is this your original story? Did you write this? Everything is mm-hmm. yours.
Maybe and somebody sues you for misappropriation, a frivolous case arguing misappropriation.
Exactly.
You can have copyright insurance.
She said, it's her story, like, from her own family. She mm-hmm. said, I can prove it. It's my own crazy family.
That happened to Rowling for the Harry Potter. There was an enormous lawsuit, which was eventually found to be frivolous. Millions of dollars in attorney's fees to defend that. She had to defend her authorship when another person came out of the woodwork and said, you didn't write that. I wrote that. You stole it from me. and they and that person got a, I think it was a female that sued her, got a bunch of lawyers. Now, of course, the lawyers on the plaintiff's side are going to be contingent, right? Contingent means you're not paying them. They only get money if they win. All right. So they launch a big lawsuit saying, no, you're not the copyright owner. My client is. We want the money. You can have insurance to protect yourself from that.
Okay.
So the insurance will pay your lawyers to protect you if somebody comes and files an action against you for misappropriation.
Well, good. I know she's listening in today. And as I said, it's a small budget film here that's going to be shot here in Florida. And I know it is about her, like, grandparents, and then and they were a lot of crazy things in her family. And it sounds like it's going to be a fun movie. But as I said, they asked her, you know.
It's a type of special insurance. Not, you know, you're not going to get that anywhere. You're going to have to research it and look for a carrier or underwriter that specifically provides that type of insurance, like Lloyd's of London would be one. It's not the kind of insurance that everybody
does.
No, it's rather rare, but it is out there. And if you have the money to afford it, it's a nice thing to have.
Okay. Well, Bill, it was so great to have you here today in the studio.
My pleasure.
And I'm so looking forward to you coming back next month, and let's pick a subject. And you have to tell us a little bit more about this lawsuit. We love to hear about lawsuits.
And if the listeners have specific questions or specific issues that they want us to address, then send them on in, and we'll discuss it.
Absolutely. And I know, again, I repeat that you give a free consultation, and they can come into your office. And
I love helping authors.
I know you do, and it's a wonderful thing. And your telephone number is?
727-546-0660.
Okay. So if you have a question, if you have any idea on what you want to do and make yourself into a real business person here when you're writing, contact Bill, and he's going to help you. And meanwhile, we'll look forward to having Bill back next month.
Wonderful.
And thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It's great seeing you again.
You too.
Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I'm back. It was so wonderful to have Bill Larson in today and to get to talk to him. And just when you're thinking about it, make sure that you get some legal advice. And I have in the studio with me another great guest, Keith Long, and I'm going to be talking to him in a few minutes about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But before I do that, I just want to mention that I just got a flyer from Barnes & Noble, the local Barnes & Noble here in Clearwater, and they have starting on June 10th, from June 10th to June 12th, they have the Teen Book Festival, and it's going to be really a lot of fun. It's called Be There. Hundreds of authors will appear in the stores nationwide, and they have quite a few appearing here in our area, so make sure that you put that on your calendar. And on Friday, June 10th at 7 p.m., they have Be in the Know, and it's a trivia blast, and it's created by Penguin Teens, and Penguin sends me a lot of their great authors, and I'm always so happy to work with Penguin on interviewing their authors. And this is a fantastic event. It's a just so much fun. You get to participate in it, and it's all sorts of trivia, and the kids will enjoy it. So one of the nice things, there are prizes, and you get reader's copies of the book. So mark that on your calendar, and that starts on June 10th. And you can find more information on the Barnes & Noble website, and just enjoy it, and take the teens in there and get them reading for the summer, because one of the things that happens to kids is if they don't read during the summer, when they get back to school, it's just so much harder for them. So get into Barnes & Noble, and we have two great locations here, one in Clearwater, one in St. Petersburg, and all over the country. And they do such a wonderful job in all of this, between the kids, the small kids. They have all sorts of reading programs, and the teens, you'll love it. So now, let me turn to Keith. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Patsy. Good to see you again.
Okay, nice to see you. So, what have you been up to?
Oh, a lot. By the way, Bill Larson, wasn't he great?
Oh, he is. He's so wonderful.
And I could listen to him all morning.
Well, he knows his business, and it's so important. He's my lawyer, and years ago, when I lived in another state, in another time, in another place, oh boy, well, I didn't know anything about legal rights or what to sign or what not to sign. And I don't even want to think about it. It's like I have this book in the back of my mind. It's like a horror book, you know, where I'm killing people.
Oh my gosh.
And that's all from what I faced when I didn't know that I had to be careful when I sign contracts. Mm-hmm. So,
By the way, his law firm, Larson & Larson, they're a member of the Pinellas County Trial Lawyers Association, and I have a CLE, what they call Continuing Legal Education Certification from the Florida Bar, and I spoke to their meeting recently.
So okay, it's a wonderful group, and I know that Bill is just a fantastic guy. He loves authors. His wife, Mickey, is delightful. She reads and reads and reads, and then so she's always a great resource for me. So I say, what are you reading? And then I say, okay, well, I'll invite that author on, because I know that she just loves to read, and that's so important when you're looking for a lawyer, that you have somebody who really, really appreciates authors and wants to protect them and wants to make sure that they have the rights.
Well, I think authors as a group, would-be authors and experienced authors, really are not informed about the legal implications of their work when they publish something. And it's not so much liability all the time, you know, defamation and things like that are liable. It's just issues like Mr. Larson was talking about, which are issues of copyright, trademark, infringement, things that a writer can be exposed to in a legal process and through litigation that never occurs to them. And it's very important to be informed and to have somebody like Mr. Larson as a consult to protect them.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I have, and Bill Larson, I have him on my website. If you go to radio-joyonpaper.com, I have a new website. It's really great, and there's a link there to Larson and Larson, and also more information that I think everyone will find very useful.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
So let's talk about some of your work. What have you, what are some of the clients that, I know that you do a lot of ghostwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun.
Oh, it is fun. And I have a really broad array of clients and subjects that I'm asked to ghostwrite for. And I'm always impressed. It's always an adventure and a collaboration between myself and the, quote, author. I'm going to air quote. People can't see me, but I'm air quoting author. Between me and the author. In the process of writing their book, and it's an adventure because what happens is the author and I discover things about both the subject and the person that they didn't know themselves, and that is part of the adventure. And of course, what I do, I have an investigative journalist background, and so I'm kind of burdened by an open mind. So when a writer says something, and I do nonfiction ghostwriting, but when a writer wants to say something, I will introduce maybe like Mr. Larson might do as a cross-examination or a question or an interrogation, just to flesh out the issue. And quite often the person I'm talking to will say, you know, I hadn't thought about that perception on this subject. Let's include that. And then all of a sudden, a whole new trail is opened up in the narrative. And so at the end of that, you've got all these little trails that are expanding the narrative and also somewhat changing the direction. And so an author who comes to a ghostwriter can expect to really develop and flesh out and expand their narrative in new ways that they can't anticipate.
Well,
so
that's
fun.
Yeah, that I can see that would be fun because you might come in with an idea, well, I want to write about this part of my life. And then just through talking to you, you pull out all sorts of other parts of their life that are maybe even more fascinating.
That's true. And I'm doing just finishing up a memoir for a Fortune 100 CEO here locally. And he and his son get together in our discussions, which I tape record. And I encourage the interaction between the son and the father, who is the kind of the emeritus CEO. And the son says, I didn't know that about how our company developed. I didn't know that about your experience or your relationship with this person. And so I let them go at it. And I include that. And I ask them, can I include that in the book? And all of a sudden, something that they hadn't outlined or thought about becomes a definition of the characters of the narration. And it's totally surprising to them, but they need somebody to question, you know, them and to help them see other sides to their own story. And that's really what I do as a ghostwriter. I introduce the author to other perceptions of their own story and let them see if they want to flesh it out in that direction. And I have in mind the audience. So in this particular case of this very prominent CEO, everybody knows him in the community. He's very well known in charities and St. Pete College and All Children's Hospital and so on. He knows Tom James and so on and so forth. But there's elements of his story that he and his son just hadn't thought about that I know the audience listening and reading this book is really interested in. And so I encourage them to flesh that out and don't be afraid of it.
So to expand their horizons.
Yeah, very much so. And quite often there's occasions when they're a little bit afraid of going there. And that's fine if they decide not to. But quite often they'll decide, you know what? Let's do it. Let's go there. And then that's where the adventure comes in.
Now, have you ever done a ghostwritten for a politician?
No, I haven't.
There, that would be fun, huh?
Well, I mean, I have to say that I would probably only take the book if we can throw open the blinds, let the sun come in, and present what I think the audience really wants to see, and that is not the fluff and not the spin and not the the popular political narrative.
Okay, good luck. That's it. He's not going to get a job here. He's not going to be writing any political biographies. I think that the minute he said no fluff, I think that eliminated.
So right, Keith,
you just lost that market, I think.
That happens.
So tell us some of the. Can you tell us some of the cases that you've written?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a children's book. It's a 32-page illustrated book for a lady in Boston. She has this idea of using Massachusetts as the environment to teach children, and it'll be a first of a series going through different states. She started out with Massachusetts, you know, where she lives, and her characters were a turtle who lives near a pond, and he meets a mouse in an old abandoned house, and they go through and discover the state of Massachusetts. And she started with a narrative, with a content, and it really needed a professional writer to touch it up. And I explained to her, I said, here's the deal. You've got a great story. When people read it, the one thing they want is they want it professionally written. They don't want any obstacles in grammar or language or the way the story develops that interfere with the story. You want them to be captured by the story. And the only way you can do that is to have it professionally written. And so you eliminate that. And also, from a practical standpoint, influencers and book reviewers will read this children's story, and they will evaluate it in literary terms. And they will want to know if grammar and punctuation and capitalization and content development meets their standards. And if it doesn't, they will say that and they will pan it. So what I explained to her is what you want to do is you want to eliminate that as an issue. And so I'm going to help you deal with that. And she accepted that. And at the end of the day, we really rewrote everything from beginning to end. And we had to go back and get new illustrations, and we had to put new scenes in it. And I said, well, now let's, there's a Sue Kochman is a member of the Barry Professional Writers Guild. I said, I want to ask her opinion. So I sent her some content to look at. And I said, here's what Sue did. She went to libraries, and or principals, I should say, of local schools directly, and asked them if they would place the book in their libraries. And she got, I think, a dozen schools to do that. And I said, that's what we want to do. And so when you're going to an educational institution, you want it well written. You want them to say, wow, I like the way it's written. And they're more likely to embrace it. They're more likely to accept it.
That's true. Speaking of Sue Kochman, I love Sue's work. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thrilled that, you know, she's, as a former principal of a school, she understands really what the schools want and what children want, and she's a great writer.
And it's a funny thing. She said, well, I happen to know a bookstore owner, one of the few bookstore owners in Boston, and I'll give you his name and have her go down and let him read it too. And I did.
Wow.
That's so she was a great help.
This whole collaboration with that you do with authors is great.
It's also an engagement. So I like to engage the audience. Just like in this case, I reached out to Sue, some people would view as a competitor, but I don't at all, because she writes children's books. I look on her and others as a strategic partner, and also this bookstore owner that she referred us to. You know, he's a good third set of eyes. Another set of eyes to evaluate, and it's all good. And I can tell you that the more interaction, the more reviews that you get before you publish, the better it is. And even though I'm supposed to be the editor and the writer and so on, like I'm supposed to have all the answers, no, I don't have all the answers. I need people to tell me what they see in this book, and I use that.
Well, and I find that writers are really very generous to each other and very mm-hmm. helpful. Whether it's romance authors or children's book authors, they all want to help, and they all want people to enjoy the reading experience.
Indeed.
And so it's fun to get them involved. So when somebody comes to you with a, do they generally people come to you just with the idea that they want to write a book, or do some people come with a completed sort of a completed book and then say, fix it?
All of the above. I've got, I'm working on a book currently for an investment banker in San Francisco, and he is, what he does, he sells businesses up to $100 million in revenues, and he wanted a book to give to his clients and to expand his brand, and he said, go to it. And I said, well, look, I wanted him invested. I could have done it, but I wanted him invested. And I said, I'm going to need something from you before I start. I'm going to need the chapter titles that you want. And I wanted that direction. And he accommodated me. And so he gave me just the chapter titles, 60,000 word target. And our arrangement is that I'm sending him a chapter, about a chapter a week. He reviews it. He accepts them literally within moments, and he pays me for the next chapter. So the payment arrangement is, it might interest your listeners. I typically will say, look, I'll start out with a retainer, a one chapter retainer in advance. Then I'll submit a chapter. Once it's accepted, you pay me for the next. So they're never invested beyond one chapter, in effect. They review each chapter as it's written before I do the next one and before they pay for the next one. And I like that because it guarantees that they accept the entirety of the book as it progresses. And they understand, you know, exactly what the content is, so they're not surprised.
It's a nice steady flow of income for you, and it makes it easier for them, too, for their cash flow. And no matter how rich they are, people always want to play it out. I have to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I will continue with our talk.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Larson & Larson is a proud sponsor of Joy on Paper. Our law firm has the experience and knowledge to help you protect your valuable intellectual property. From trademark, copyright, and patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements, the attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, are here to advise you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com. That's Larson & Larson, your intellectual property attorneys.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Cassie with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Keith Long, who's here to tell us all about ghost writing and all types of writing that he does, from editing to
complete
whatever.
Writing. Yeah, and I have to say, I have to interrupt you, the music that you play puts me in mind. It makes me feel good. And it reminds me of the Boston Symphony. They brought I guess she was just a secretary in on a typewriter and a chair and a table, and they played this great musical symphony behind her and as she did the typing part of it. And I still remember it. It was a great, great performance, actually.
Well, I always say the people who are, you know, working on computers today have missed the fun that we had.
The little bell.
with the bell and just with that whole sound of the typewriter. It just... it was, when you talk about music to the ear, it was really just to hear that sound. And, of course, I was particular to the Selectric typewriter, which I loved. And
the little ball, right?
Yeah, the little ball, and it was just magical. It had this wonderful sound.
It was tactile.
Yeah, and it was wonderful. And the keyboards today are too quiet. And I cannot stand those bubble keyboards where you have no feel. I mean, I really love the feel of a keyboard, and... because I always use an ergometric keyboard. So anybody out there who doesn't have an ergometric keyboard and you spend a long time on the computer, you really should get one because
the difference? What is
it? Well, it's curved. So you're... And I was... for quite a few years, I was having this terrible carpal tunnel syndrome. And this was quite a few years ago. And then my son said to me one day, "Wait, we have to get you an ergometric one." And I didn't even know at the time what ergometric was.
Sure.
And so he got me one. And, I mean, it was like within weeks, all of my carpal tunnel syndrome just disappeared.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it's wonderful. It's just a wonderful thing.
That balances the narrative, as my investigative journalist had. And listening to even you describe that, your son comes up with a new ergometric keyboard, a new technology, and it puts me in mind of what Bill Larson said with Harry Potter. And when an author writes a book, personally speaking, I look for the opportunity for that book to be a vehicle for that person, for that author, not just about sales of that book. And when he mentioned Harry Potter, the benefits and the payments and the notoriety and the brand expansion that she gets from it, apart from the book sales itself, which were tremendous, and also she was turned down by publishers, a number of them.
17.
Was it 17?
17 publishers.
And that speaks to I shouldn't say that on a publishing show, but that speaks to the corporate publishing environment today. And I'm very much an advocate of self-publishing, for no other reason than to compete with that corporate environment, the so-called suit up in the corporate world, which, typically a lot of writers have to pay for marketing to get a publisher to accept them. There's quite a long delay, and sometimes the publishers have their own editing, which they want to rewrite, which may or may not be good. And so, I mean, an alternative to that is self-publishing. But what put me in mind about Harry Potter is that a book really, for a lot of people, I mean, for an individual that just wants to get their story out for posterity, then that's one thing. But for a professional person, a person that wants to do things with the book, that's the way you should look at it, so that when a person writes and publishes a book and releases it, what is available to that person is leverage to put her or him to where they want to be, independent of how many books they sell. So if they sell 1,000 or 10,000 copies, that's great, or more. But to have that brand out there, like Sarah M., I don't know if you know Sarah. She wrote a book about her experiences in the Cambodian...
She was here on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
You missed that show.
She was here.
She was fantastic. And she has used her book to really launch a speaking whole life for her.
And she tells this story of her experience both then and here in the U.S., and it's a spiritual message that expands her presence in ways that, frankly, she wouldn't have done without that book. And so regardless of how many books she sells, she now is becoming a brand of her own and based on her message, totally independent of how many books she sells. And so I have that in mind when I work with an author. A business book is easy to work that way, but I have a lot of attorneys who I work with as ghostwriters. I have a lot of business people. I have people with medical stories to tell, all kinds of stories that enables them to build a platform that sends their message out and spreads it around.
And can launch them into different directions. For example, the speaking market is a big market.
Oh, it's huge.
People pay, for inspirational speakers, and it's a wonderful. Well, you really do need a book in order to do these that type of thing nowadays.
That's right.
They're looking for that.
And that's why if a person wants to do that on their own, they can do that. But when it gets exposure and it ever gets reviewed, you do want it professionally written.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because they judge you on that. So that. And there are many, many speakers bureaus out there, and people hire speakers.
It's a whole industry.
It's a major industry, but they do want to see a very professional book before they will even, have a look at. You can do a demo tape, but without having a professional book, you're not going to get the job.
True. So. And I might mention that as a ghostwriter, I price my work at pennies a word, literally. So I try to make it affordable and practical for people that, don't have like $1 million in the bank.
And what is your website?
Journalist on Call.
Journalist on Call. Oh, I like that. Uh-huh. Okay. You have a book called Journalist on Call?
No.
Well, you better write one really
fast.
Oh, my
gosh. That's a good idea.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm going to have Keith back here, and we're going to interview him when he releases his book called Journalist on Call, because, this is a fantastic
idea. I'm going to have to give you some royalties.
Oh, boy. I got it. Free coffee. You have to bring me in some coffee. So that's wonderful. So thank you so much for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
You have a great show, and I encourage everybody to support Patsy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And go to my new website. It's radio-joyonpaper.com. And you can listen to the archives of the programs and see all of the wonderful people I've interviewed. And I'm just so excited about so many interviews coming up this summer. So meanwhile, I just want to tell everyone to go to Miami Avenue Wine Bar if you have a chance this weekend. And remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So join me next Tuesday at 11 for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Have a great weekend. Okay, bye.